When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny from the Crystal City Sports Pub. Come on out and enjoy an evening with us. We're here until 6:30 on The Fan.
As Washington continues to build the foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Morod can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
We've been previewing the Commanders and the Eagles for most of this program. Let's dive in deeper on Philly and find out just what Washington is getting itself into on Sunday over in Landover, Maryland at Northwest Stadium. It's time to scout the Eagles. And to break the Eagles down for us, we've got John McMullen, Eagles insider, SI Now in Philly. John, thanks for a few minutes. Why don't we just start with the status of A.J. Brown? Was missing some practice time. Originally, when he got hurt last week, people thought he'd be out for a little while. Then he was back in the game. How healthy is he, and will he play?
He is going to play, and he is banged up. It was interesting. He got hurt last week against Pittsburgh, where a lot of people assumed the Twitter doctors, the ex-doctors, had a bit of a hip-drop tackle that looked like it might have been a high ankle sprain, but that's not the issue. The issue is he tweaked his knee in practice on Thursday, so that created a little bit of concern. Was able to get out there today, spoke to us afterwards. He said, I'm playing. So, but he's banged up, and most people are. If you make it to week 16 of the NFL season and you played a lot, you probably got something going on. So whether he's 100% or not, doubtful, but he's played through things before, and he's obviously been a very effective player.
How is the drama perceived or real? Not really seemed to have affected this team at all as they've ripped off 10 straight wins, John.
Well, I think everybody, the drama was interesting only because I think it was focused on the wrong thing. I think, you know, the passing game was not nearly as effective as it had been, and it bottomed out where they had 83 net passing yards against Carolina, which is obviously not acceptable when you look at the talent that Philadelphia has. So, you know, AJ said, you know, what can get better? And he said passing. That's all he said. And by the way, after the game, Devontae Smith said the same thing. Jalen Hurts said the same thing. Nick Sirianni, Jordan Mailata, Lane Johnson. And then there was a sort of Brandon Graham faux pas on the radio.
John, let me ask you real quick. Let me ask you. I bet you they didn't all say passing as a one-word answer.
No.
Leaving that vague was the problem. And he also, him and Hurts have had problems. We've seen him barking at him on the sideline whenever he's not catching balls. Like, it's not like the media is the big bad guy here. Like, he should do a better job speaking.
Everybody calls me the bad guy. I think it's ludicrous. It was completely self-inflicted. I agree with you, Grant. As soon as AJ said that. I said, oof, that's going to be a problem.
Right.
Because, again, if you do it contextually, and that's what Jalen Hurts did, that's what Nick Sirianni did, it's what Devontae Smith did, it's not a problem. So leaving it open-ended like that. But it turned out that wasn't even the issue. The issue was Brandon Graham went on the radio and said Jalen and AJ were having some personal problems in their relationship. And, you know, that's the soap opera nature of that is what took off. So, look, the passing game hasn't been nearly as effective as everyone expected. And it hasn't been good at times. And with this talent that they have, despite the record, the 12-2 record, everybody's looking at this passing offense and saying, you know, what the heck is going on here?
John McMullen, SI, with us here on G&D, breaking down the Philadelphia Eagles, Washington's opponent this weekend. So, I mean, to me, I think they're just as likely to get the number one seed as anybody else. Maybe they're probably the inside track at this point. John, how important is that to them? Or is it just, let's, you know, we've done enough here, let's be healthy going into the postseason?
Oh, no, it's very important to them. The odds are against them. They don't have the inside track. They don't control their own destiny. Both Detroit and Minnesota do. If one of those two teams can win out, and obviously Detroit has so many issues injury-wise. So, but there's still a good chance because the Eagles have the lightest schedule down the stretch. Washington, their only tough game on paper. So there's a possibility they could win out. If they win out, I would say they have a decent chance to get that number one seed. But this team has reached the Super Bowl twice since 2017, and both times they had the number one seed, and everything had to go through Philadelphia. So that's what they want. That's their goal. It's a very difficult place to play. But still a lot of work, and they almost have to win out to get it.
Speaking of trying to get something down the stretch, Saquon Barkley was on his way to the all-time rushing record in a single season, it looked like. But after the Steelers game, maybe Eric Dickerson is off the hook here. How likely is it that he can still make this a Week 18 storyline? Because I just love the idea of him playing the Giants. And having a chance to break the record.
Out. I mean, A, it has to mean something. Obviously, the Eagles have bigger goals than setting an individual rushing record. So if they're locked into the number two seed by Week 18, I can't imagine they're going to try to beat a rushing record. You know, Saquon Barkley gets hurt. I don't think they're going to approach it that way. So a lot of things have to fall into place. And he probably needs one more big game, one more 200-yard game. So if that happens against the Commanders, all of a sudden it's back in play. And I think, you know, I don't know if the Eagles even want that. I don't know if they want that pressure to try to get him this record, even though it would be cool for him and the players. And I think the franchise as a whole, I think they got much, much bigger goals than that.
Great Jalen Hurts' season overall. You touched on it in general as it associates with the drama and some of the passing game at times. But how good a year is he having? It's not that MVP candidate year of a couple years ago, but I also think it's not as bad as maybe some people are making out. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's his worst season as a starter. And that goes back to 2021, his first season when they made a late run to make the playoffs. I think, you know, individually, game to game, I don't think he's had a great season. That doesn't mean he's a bad player, but I don't think he's played well compared to his demonstrated performance in the past. Certainly not close to 20. I argue he played better individually last year when they collapsed, but they had one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Hasn't played great. Hasn't been consistent. As I said, you had a two-week stretch where he threw for 118 yards against Baltimore and 108 yards against Carolina. It hasn't been great, guys. And I got killed for this on my show locally. He hasn't, you know, considering the talent around him, it hasn't been good at times.
I thought he was bad against Washington in the first game, especially in the first half. Like, legitimately,
yeah, another game. Yeah. There were a lot of games like that, Grant. A lot of games like that.
Rusty or just kind of off. But I will say this for him, and I'm sure you can echo these sentiments better than I can, but he has not turned the ball over. I remember at the beginning of the year, you know, the thing that was, you know, was hurting them a little bit was he had the two picks against Green Bay and he had four through three games. He has one interception since then, and that's like one time now in 11 games where he's been picked off, I think the numbers are. So to his credit, maybe they're not making enough plays, they're not throwing the ball downfield enough or effectively, but he is not turning the ball over, which seems like a big change from the first month.
Yeah, I think there's an unintended consequence to that. I think that was one of the things the Eagles hammered home in the bye week, and they have taken they've protected the ball tremendously since then. And they're 10-0, so it's hard to complain, so we're nitpicking here. But I think he's been very cautious. They drilled it into his head so much. And it's a difficult tightrope to walk because you want explosive plays, but you don't want to turn the football over. And I think he's been so cautious, it's impacted the offense as a whole. And then you have the aspect of the running game, which has been historic. And the unintended consequence of that is the passing offense is atrophied a little bit. So there's always, it might seem great, but you prefer to have a little bit of a better balance, and maybe they're getting there. Certainly Pittsburgh was their best game of the season, I would say. But yeah, there's been some issues, and part of that give and take of taking, you know, such good care of the football, they've been very, very cautious in the passing game.
This Vic Fangio defense works. They're first in the NFL in terms of points allowed. They gave Washington fits the first time they played. They've been really, really impressive. What makes this group so good, and is there a weak link that maybe Washington might be able to exploit?
Boy, I don't see a weak link. I mean, the defense has been the story. It's been amazing because it wasn't supposed to be this. And, you know, I joked that when Vic Fangio got here, the reputation was so big, I said, there's no way he can live up to it. He's been better. I mean, he's been better. And so many people have copied Vic's schemes around the league, and nobody runs it as better. I don't think it's the scheme. I think it's the teaching of it, getting players up to speed. And you talk about rookie cornerbacks like Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. That position's so hard to play as a rookie. People are talking about if Quinyon could – ever catch a football and get an interception, he might be an all-pro. That's how well he's played. And Cooper DeJean has been one of the best slot cornerbacks in the NFL. Zach Bond has played like an all-pro at linebacker. He's never played the position before. He's an edge rusher and special teams player. The Eagles signed him for $1.6 million. He's arguably been the best linebacker in football. And then Jalen Carter has taken off and turned into, I think, what a lot of us thought he was going to be if he could, you know, mature a little bit and keep his nose clean off the field. He's just a dominating, game-wrecking player. So it's been an impressive unit and almost worse to first. They were one of the worst defenses in the NFL last season, and they're number one this season in top five in just about every quarter. Every category there is.
How much talk is there about the one seed? Like, I think there's some feeling in town maybe as if, you know, you're catching Philly at a time where they put a lot of hay in the barn and they're coming down the stretch of a season where they're going to win the division. It would seem to me like they are going to play with a ton of urgency and you're getting them at their peak because they can still get the one seed. But, like, what is the vibe and the tone up there in that regard?
Yeah, just I mean, they know. Both of their Super Bowl runs recently were from the one seed. So they know how important it is to keep things in Philadelphia, especially if you think about Detroit and how difficult that environment is, Minnesota, how difficult that environment is. So, yeah, as long as the number one seed is on the table, the Eagles are going to be playing. Everybody playing hard and playing the fight and get that because that's the easiest path to the Super Bowl, and they know it better than most, and they want it. The problem is there's a bunch of really good teams in the NFC, and right now Detroit, as I said, controls their destiny. Minnesota controls their destiny. The Eagles do not. So they can't afford to lose a game.
John, if Washington wins this one, I'm not picking them to, but if they do, how did they do it?
I think you saw it in the first game, on the Thursday night game. I mean, they were leading into the fourth quarter. They were doing a solid job on Saquon. And I think Dan Quinn talked about it down there. You just got to finish. The two Saquon touchdown runs late, they were 20 seconds apart. You had the turnover. But there were less than 5 minutes on the clock. So if you think about it, 55 minutes of that game, Washington was a tip ball away, a fumble away from winning that football game. So Jaden Daniels has got to play better. I always joke. Yeah. Vic Fangio, I'll take Vic Fangio against any young quarterback because I think he's going to throw things out that confuse young quarterbacks. Not an insult to Jaden Daniels. I think that's anybody. I think Daniels is obviously going to be the rookie of the year. He's completely helped turn that franchise around. And he's going to be a pain in the you-know-what in this division for a lot of years to come. But early on, I think they made it very difficult for him. I think he was very tentative. He was very indecisive. So hopefully learn from that experience. He's got to play better. And he's just got to trust himself. As I said, that's the one word that stood out to me about Jaden Daniels in that first game. He just looked tentative about everything.
John McMullen covers the Eagles for SI in Philly. Thank you for helping us scout the Eagles. We appreciate you.
Always enjoy it. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you, buddy.
We're live at the Crystal City Sports Pub for a Football Friday, a little Friday field trip, getting ready for the Commanders and the Eagles, talking all things NFL and college today. By the way, I don't know if you guys saw this. So Brock Purdy, the starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, like every quarterback does in the league, has to get his offensive linemen gifts. So I guess the way the 49ers put the video out, seems like they've been waiting on their gift from Brock Purdy, and you normally get it the week before Christmas. So the film crew from the 49ers is like following him down the hall. He walks into the room where all the O-linemen are. They got 10 offensive linemen on the roster. And Purdy goes, "Hey, guys, it took a little longer than I wanted it to, but I got you your present. Follow me." So they all follow him out the door. Did you see what he got them?
I did not see, no.
Brock Purdy got all 10 of the linemen on the San Francisco 49ers brand new vehicles.
So cars?
Cars. So they walk out to the front of the practice facility, and he goes, now it's obviously sponsored, like he has some deal with Toyota, I guess, or something, but he shouts out the car company, and then they walk out to the parking lot. He goes, "I got five," I don't remember what the two types of cars were, like one's a giant SUV, one's a giant truck. They're like tricked out with like nice seats and everything.
Oh, wow.
He's like, "So you guys can pick what you want." So I have a million questions. The first of them is, though, Brock Purdy made $900,000 this year. Brock Purdy is one of the lowest paid quarterbacks in the league and the lowest paid starting quarterback in the league over many, 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 many years. 10 offensive linemen get these deals. Now, he struck some kind of deal with the car company.
I think the car company recognized a great opportunity there.
Okay, but no other quarterback has done this. Some money is changing hands.
Yep.
So is it possible that the car company's like, when you get your $60 million AAV deal this offseason, when you cash in on $190 million guaranteed or whatever it's going to be,
yep,
come on back and we'll take our, you know, I don't know, whatever the deal that they struck is then. But that's the first of my questions. And then how do you decide, like, what if, who gets what car? I want that one. He wants that one. Are we paper, rock, scissors for him? It was just, there's nice presents. Yesterday, Patrick Mahomes got his offensive line watches or whatever. They all walked out, and little Brock Purdy got him cars.
Little old Brock Purdy. I did not get you guys cars this time.
You didn't get Buresh and Clary cars?
I did not. I got you guys Christmas gifts, but I did not get you cars. Mm. Spoiler alert.
You didn't get Darius a car, so he may have gotten a car.
You're right. I specifically did not say that. So, Darius, I wouldn't hold out hope, but you can if you want to. I firmly believe it's a sponsorship thing. I don't think there's any way.
You don't think he spent a penny?
I don't think he spent any money. I think he used his juice. I think he used the hookup. And I think they recognized, his publicist did, or somebody that's really smart, recognized what an unbelievable opportunity for advertising inventory at the end of a year. So in December, you're basically making room for the next year's models in a lot of cases. And that is one of those, like, I'm sure there's like a tax deduction involved and some accounting, fancy penny, different stuff that I don't know anything about. But that's my guess, is that, you know, you got to make a lot more money than that to not notice, let's just call it 10, call them $60,000 vehicles coming out of your account. Like, that's too much money for a guy that's not making $100 million.
Yeah, so I think it's somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's nothing, but I also don't think that he dropped 600 grand. But he stroked a check. He did. I mean, it's the present to these 10 guys. I think he said, I'll give you X amount up front. By the way, he's got some deal with them. He's sponsored by them, whatever. And I'll pay you the rest when I get my fat contract this offseason. Because whether you like it or not, people, Brock Purdy's about to get $60 million a year.
Enjoy yourself. Take a swim in those waters. It's happening.
It will absolutely be happening. Speaking of Brock Purdy, San Francisco still has very, very slim playoff hopes. They're essentially cooked. But there are two teams in that division, Seattle and the Rams, who are hoping to make the playoffs, that are chasing Washington down. What games matter most to the Commanders this weekend? We'll get into that next on The Fan. Grant and Danny, it's a football Friday and a field trip Friday out and about at the Crystal City Sports Pub. You are locked in to The Fan. I think I just learned something about our producer. Ryan can play a little ping pong.
Ryan can pong a little bit.
I just came over to the table a minute ago and I said, you know, where's Clary? Where's Danny? And I look over and Rhino's at the table. He's getting after it.
He can play a little bit.
He's giving you the what for over there.
That's right.
I mean, where did your ping pong skills come from?
So we grew up with a ping pong table, actually, in my grandma's basement, who lived across the street from us. And we also kind of had, like, our own kind of crappy ping pong table down in our basement. We ruined it as kids. But we had, like, a professional setup back in the garage. And me and all my buddies, throughout the summer, that's what we would do. Go to the pool, you'd bike home, and you'd play ping pong every single summer. And I haven't played ping pong in years. And at first, I mean, Danny and I were both rusty, and then all of a sudden,
came back.
It's starting to, I mean, still rusty, still ain't right, but starting to come back a little bit.
A little.
A little bit for the boys.
Well, I got to tell you, I was impressed.
Thank you.
Well done. I'm looking over there thinking I got some amateurs, and then you're just making moves forehand, backhand.
Oh,
The boys are hitting it a little bit. It's as the two-time Chester Brooks Women's Tennis Club champion, I can identify good play, and I see good play right there.
Oh, I see what Danny's doing. Danny's taking your shine right now.
I mean, not at all. Ryan can play.
No. I mean, he's acknowledged that.
I will say, Danny, I didn't mean to not compliment
you.
No,
I didn't need it.
You're blocked by this wall, as you can see, so I didn't see you. So that's why I was complimenting Ryan.
So here's why we should.
Champion, I will also compliment you.
I didn't need it, but I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Here's why, though, if I may. This
sure.
is gonna it's Ryan, you're not going to look good here for a second.
Uh-huh.
The number of times Ryan has claimed mastery or excellence or intimate knowledge thereof of something, and then we've come to find out, like, maybe he's not the stadium guy. Maybe he's not the weather guy.
Yes.
Maybe he's not the guy that knows, that's a U.S. history guy. Maybe he doesn't know how many justices are on the Supreme Court or how many votes are in the Electoral College. Maybe he's not even sure what the Electoral College is, despite his boasting. So when he boasts about his acumen and lives up to it, that's cool.
So did he say before you guys went over there that he was good?
Well, he told me, you sleep on my ping pong. And I kind of went, now you've told me I sleep on a lot of things that I don't sleep on. I slept on his ping pong. He can play. He's good.
Chris Russell will be very disappointed to know that you guys on the job today.
On the job.
We're playing ping pong. But I normally judge jobs by, can you play ping pong while on the clock?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, it's a good place to work.
Yes.
If so, facto, we should probably do more shows here. That's all I'm saying.
First of all, Crystal City Sports Pub has ping pong, just as a quick side.
That plus the Old Bay wings.
That I just destroyed.
The crab dip and all the other things that we've crushed today.
Yeah.
Do they have a pool table? I guess
there's
they
a pool
do.
Table. Okay. Yeah, there's a pool table.
So that's what I grew up with. Now, I don't have the same story as you, where I'm just going to go over there and I'm Minnesota fats it up or something. It was one of those things we had in the basement. We occasionally played.
Mm-hmm.
But there was never a hunger for me to get really good at it. I think I probably played it 100 times
Oof.
In the first, like, 75 nights that we had it, and then it was like once
was the end.
Every few months after that, where a buddy would come over and they go, "You got a pool table? Let's play."
And you're like, "Oh yeah, okay."
You play, and then you end up on Madden playing video games the rest of the night.
See, back in our day as well, we actually had a pool table downstairs. Also, we had a sweet little setup there.
What basement is this?
It was silly, and Mike got us a pool table / hockey table / ping pong table. And back in the day, I got really good at pool because my dad was also really good at pool.
Is he a pool shark a little bit?
He was a little bit of a pool shark back in the day, and he used to play, and he was like, if you beat me, you get to skip school. One time, I did beat him. Did I get to miss school?
You did not.
I did not get to miss school.
That's an unfulfilled promise, Mike.
You got to figure that one out, sir.
I know.
You promised the young man, and he remembers it to this day.
Until this day, I was still exactly where I'm like, well, I get to miss school. He's like, no, you don't. I'm like, okay.
He should come pick you up one morning from your apartment and be like, you're not going to work today, son.
You beat me in pool.
We're going to go see a movie together.
I love it.
I was at a bar in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Dude, there's a whole bunch of life choices. Anyway, the point is I was there, and like a pool shark guy tried to hustle me. You know what I mean? Like, it was such a cliched, bad, like 1980s sort of like, he looked like a dude that's trying to hustle you at pool. And then he's sort of like, you want to do some friendly wages on the balls? Like, it's not even his voice, but like that level of sophistication. I was like, no, man, like, I can tell you're probably really good, and
yeah,
I'm going to lose my money to you.
Fine.
Like, we can play for fun, though, if you want. And he didn't want to do that.
Here's some of the games that matter the most, boys, to the Commanders in the NFL this weekend. Washington, obviously, head-to-head with Philadelphia is where it starts. You get a win, there is a chance they could clinch the playoffs, get to 10-5 with some help. They're not going to clinch outright this weekend just with a win. But the games outside of theirs that matter the most to Washington, we can start with the Rams, who are playing this weekend in a gotta-have-it game. You know, if they win out, they're in control of their own destiny at this point. The Rams would be a division champion out of the NFC West. They are at the Jets, 8-6 L.A., 4-10 New York. That's a 1 o'clock game on Sunday. The Seahawks, who are also 8-6, tied for the division lead, also have control of their own destiny the rest of the way. They play the Rams to end the season. They're hosting 12-2 Minnesota. That's a really tough matchup for them. Geno Smith got banged up last week. We saw Sam Howell play. The other game in the NFC that matters the most to Washington, the Atlanta Falcons, who host the New York Giants. Very, very winnable game. Frankly, there's no reason Atlanta should lose, and they are going to their rookie quarterback, Michael Penix. You want to talk about a soft landing spot for the kid?
There you go.
They benched Kirk Cousins. They're going to Penix to take on a 2-12 Giants team. 1 o'clock kick at home, indoors, 72 degrees in Atlanta on Sunday.
So this is kind of quirky, but despite the fact that Atlanta is two games behind Washington, they can still catch Washington. I'll get to that in a second. And despite the fact that Seattle and L.A., one's going to win the division, the other's not, is only one game behind Washington, they can't catch Washington. It's a weird little quirk of the way that the schedule is. So, to this point, if Seattle or L.A. loses a game and they play each other, they can no longer catch the local Washington 53 for that seventh spot. It means, inherently, that one's going to get the division, and that, of course, assumes that Washington wins one of their remaining games, at least. So, back to the Atlanta Falcons. They're the team that everybody's watching like a hawk here at this stage, right?
Kind of like a falcon.
Almost like a falcon might watch something. That's very good. So if the Giants do the Giants thing where they lose to Atlanta, Atlanta then becomes 8-7. Let's just say for the sake of argument that Washington loses this week, they are 9-6. Those two teams match up with the chance to then have Washington fall to 9-7. Then Atlanta would be 9-7. Then they're in a virtual tie. Atlanta would get the tiebreaker because of the head-to-head matchup. And then it's anybody's game there for the last week to see what happens. So that's so much more intriguing, and it's so strange, the fact that Atlanta's two games behind but has a better chance to catch Washington. For Seattle and for the Rams, their path basically is through the NFC West. There's some exceptions, but that's kind of the basic way to think about it.
In the AFC, it looks like both the Chargers and the Broncos will make the playoffs and be a wild card team at this point, but Cincinnati is still alive. So is Miami and Indianapolis. With a win this weekend, the Colts, Dolphins, and Bengals will all pull to within two games of Denver with two to go. The Bengals play Denver next week, mm-hmm. so they would take the tiebreaker from Denver with a win. They'd be one back, and then they would need the Broncos to lose again with them winning in the final weekend, and the Bengals could get in. I don't think it's going to happen, still very unlikely, but Cincinnati getting in the way Joe Burrow has played this year, even though their defense
is horrendous,
dog water,
just horrendous,
I think that they could still be a team that no one would want to see. I mean, Burrow has played at an MVP level. You can make the case he's a top three quarterback in the NFL, having the best year of his career, and he's done it kind of in anonymity because everyone's thought all along they're not going to make the playoffs. What if they did, though? So you got to keep close tabs on Cincinnati this weekend as they try to keep their slim hopes alive. They play the Cleveland Browns at 1 o'clock on Sunday.
So you touched on it. So all three teams that are chasing in the AFC, they've all dug themselves holes various ways. It happened. Miami was injuries. Cincinnati was just bad play, to be frank with you. The Colts, little of everything. They all have very winnable games this weekend, right, as you kind of look at their schedule. The Dolphins have a banged up, bruised 49ers team. They're only a point and a half favorites at home. You look at the Colts play a wretched Titans team that's already made a quarterback change. They're a hot mess. And you already touched on it with Cincinnati. I believe they have Cleveland in this one. They're one of the biggest favorites of the week. 8.5-point favorites at home are the Bengals over their division rival, the Browns.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. We're taking you up to 6:30. Still got our final predictions for the Commanders and the Eagles to come your way next. I want to tell you about a rule that John Gruden says should be changed in the NFL. See if we agree with him or not. On the eve of three college football playoff games tomorrow, one that kicks off tonight, he wants to see the NFL take a page out of a college football book. We'll get into that next. Live on a Football Friday, we're at Crystal City Sports Pub. So if you're getting out of the office for the final time on this Friday before the holidays, stop by and say hello. This is The Fan. On site at the Crystal City Sports Pub, Grant and Danny with you on The Fan. Starting to get a little nervous. The time it's expected to take me to get to MGM for my live show at 7 o'clock for Caps Hockey tonight on Monumental Sports is climbing just a bit.
Yeah, it's not going down.
There could be a little bit of solo Danny Hoo-Hey in the offing on Grant
or
and Danny.
Marty can do it anyway. If you want to, get yourself on the road, you should do it.
Might just have to happen.
It's
but
all
we
good.
Are going strong here down the stretch ahead of a big Week 16 in the NFL. The 49ers just ruled out running back Isaac Guerrero, who is their fourth running back, by the way. Think about this. They cannot keep anyone on the field.
I'm telling you, they have this year once every 4.5 seasons.
They really do.
Where
it's
they
wild.
Just can't ever get healthy, ever get right, and you just go, this is not going
to
happen. The ship is not turning around. Yeah.
Trent Williams is also out this week, by the way. The Bengals at the Chiefs is in play for round one. I just saw Bill Simmons tweeted this out. People are talking about the calculations on how that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how must-see that would be if the Bengals, as a bad team,
somehow
crowbar their way in with the 6% chance that's now become a 15% chance that after this weekend could be a 25% chance, and then they get, let's say, Kansas City at Arrowhead for that awesome Burrow Mahomes. Like, I tell you right now, Chiefs fans want nothing to do with the Bengals. I got a buddy I do a show with on BetQL who broadcasts out of KC. And with every Bengals loss this year, he's like one step closer to eliminating them. And they kind of, I think, hide behind the idea that it's like, oh, we just hate them. But I think there's a part of it, too, where you go, I don't want to have to play that.
Yeah, I do think you hate them.
They got their number.
Yeah, I also think they're terrifying.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a thing, by the way. So, yeah, I mean, as you...
Especially, like, in a playoff game as, like, a 10-point favorite or something.
Yeah.
All the pressure would be on the road, on the home team.
I mean, it's basically that since Burrow and that offense went... Now, that's assuming T. Higgins' health, which you can never assume. He stays missing 17 days of practice in a row and then, like, is in the game, is out of the game.
How is someone going to pay him number one wide receiver money?
Someone's going to do it.
He can't stay on the field.
I love him, but I also can't be the one to pay him. Like, he scares me so much in that regard. Anyway, but when they've got all the things working, Chase Brown at running back, Chase on the outside, and T. Higgins, that offense is awesome. And it's not as if this Kansas City Chiefs offense is overly prolific. They'll be plenty good when it comes to playoff time because it's Andy Reid, it's Pat Mahomes, and you know it'll be a couple guys you never heard of to go with Kelce and company. But I don't know if they can win a shootout. Are you confident that they could win a 33-31 game against Cincinnati right now? I mean, their defense is awesome, but let's say it's not a game where the defense is a factor. Let's say it's everybody brings every gun they have in the arsenal, and then we're just doing a shootout at the OK Corral. Would you feel confident that Kansas City wins that one? I'd be shaken if I was a Chiefs fan. A
couple of updates from out in Ashburn today. So we're getting ready for Commanders-Eagles. Pro Bowl voting. Polling is continuing as of the final 3 days of voting now. So up until the 23rd, I think, is when things close. Jaden Daniels is eighth among all players and behind only Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen in Pro Bowl voting. So no NFC quarterback has garnered more Pro Bowl votes at this point than Jaden Daniels, number one. Terry McLaurin is fourth at wide receiver overall. So Terry McLaurin will be in the Pro Bowl this year almost certainly. Bobby Wagner is fourth right now at inside linebacker among Pro Bowl voting. On the defensive line for Washington, Dante Fowler is fifth in Pro Bowl voting. I mean, you want to talk about,
how about that?
Stuff in the ballot. Commanders fans have been getting out the vote. Frankie Louvu, sixth at outside linebacker. You've got other guys that are hopefuls, also top 10 vote receivers at their positions. Jeremy Chin, Zach Ertz, Austin Eckler is a kick returner. Tyler Ott is a long snapper. So Commanders fans, just like they've done every week for Daniels as the rookie of the week.
They've been voting.
They are making sure their guys get nods as Pro Bowlers.
So I've been referencing this a little bit here of late, but I think Terry McLaurin has a great chance to make an All-Pro team. Probably not first, but I do think he can.
I don't think
being,
there's any way he could be first.
Yeah, I think there's usually there's three right on your first team. So I think he could absolutely end up on the second team. Last year there were four receivers, for example. So you might go, well, how was he fourth just in the NFC? Well, you start to look at the list. Amon-Ra St. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, Malik Nabers is having an unbelievable season. Jaxon Smith-Njigba's had an unreal year.
Justin Jefferson.
And Justin Jefferson also plays in the NFC. So there's a bunch of guys that, no disrespect to Terry, kind of is the point. He's having the year. He's plenty good enough. I think he's got a great chance to make an All-Pro team.
Yeah, I'm with you. As far as health goes, John Allen ruled out. Didn't really need to be done because we knew he wasn't playing, but he is making enough progress that they wanted to make it clear he would not play. They're not going to activate him. But in the concussion protocol still listed as questionable, Zach Ertz and Jeremy Chin. Both of those guys still could be playing this weekend. I think Chin, from what we've heard, is ahead of Ertz. But Ertz was moving around okay on the practice field from what I saw.
Both those guys would help an awful lot. I mean, Chin especially, maybe in run support, you know, or just, you know, anything kind of flared out of the backfield, deal with the occasional tight end type deal, or Jalen Hurts on some scrambles.
John Gruden brought this up on Barstool Sports' Pardon My Take show, and I just want to bounce this off you. He said that he thinks the NFL should adopt college football's pass interference rule, which is instead of a spot foul for that could be a 40, 50, 60-yard penalty on a long throw, no matter where and no matter what the pass interference call is, it's just a 15-yarder and an automatic first down. He likes that better than the spot foul for 30, 40 yards at a time.
I wonder what the rationale is for it, because I've always felt that too. Like, I don't like the idea of a 41-yard penalty or a 26-yard penalty. I think that's too punitive. I guess it stems from the fact that if the player wasn't interfered with, that's what he would have caught and that's what he would have gotten. So I understand that you're taking it off the board, but I don't know. I've never felt that same. I wouldn't hate it if they did it, but I don't have the same passion that maybe the Gruden does. What do you think?
I'd keep it as it is. In fact, I don't mind college's rule the way that it is either, but in the NFL, I like the fact that if I make the business decision to illegally break up a pass way downfield for 42 yards, yep, I give up the same 42-yard completion that I just saved myself. Because otherwise, it's just easy math. Why not tackle people all the time?
Yeah, if it's going to be a touchdown, yeah, you just tackle him.
A guy blows past you, just start grabbing at his shoe, dive, and knock him to the ground. Like, I think it should be a bigger penalty because these are on plays a lot of the time that are the biggest
throws,
the biggest plays of the game where these are deep shots. So a five-yard throw on a hitch route should be different than if you interfere with someone on a 47-yard throw at the end of the game.
So Yeah, I smote your cooking there. So I wouldn't protest either way. That's not one I feel strongly about. There are others I do feel strongly about. Like the automatic first down. On a 4th and 31, there's a 5-yard illegal contact. That's a first down. You'll never get me to understand how that makes sense. That's just one example. But, yeah, this one I wouldn't feel passionately if they changed it. But I think I kind of like it the way it is, though.
Grant and Danny on the Fan up till 6:30. Crystal City Sports Pub is where the show is live on a field trip Friday. Week 16 in the NFL and Commanders-Eagles looms. Predictions coming your way next.